Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and I've brought along my most favorite and beautiful friend.
Yeah, who's that? Is that that little koala that's sitting up on your computer?
Well, it represents something magnificent.
Good
So,
evening,
who
everyone.
are you? Oh, I just love it. You never know what he's going to do or what he has up his sleeve. Usually something.
Or whether he's got a sleeve, for that matter.
Really? Anyway, my friends, if you receive our newsletters, you know that today we have someone I think is very unusual for a multitude of reasons. And this is Saint Helena, who was the mother of Constantine the First. There is such a little bit known about her, and I feel that she was a very powerful woman as far as Christianity was concerned. And one of the few things that you can find out about her, if you look up any information, is that she is credited for finding what was considered the true cross, the one that Yeshua was crucified upon, the nails. And she built some churches in Palestine. And when you consider the fact that she was a woman of great age when she did this and traveled a great distance to get to the Holy Land and find these places, she has quite a remarkable story. And it was the reason why I felt that her information would be very important and interesting to the listeners, because she came at a time and worked at a time when Christianity was being formed as the official religion of the Roman Empire. So, with that, now that we've had an introduction, I'm going to mention that for those who are not familiar with our program, we are able to call forth people from the other side. And I want to tell you that this is something that everyone can do. Everyone can speak to people on the other side. And I know what you're thinking. My goodness, how in the world can we do that? People can't do that. Well, it is something fascinating, because what we have learned how to do is to use the right side of the brain and use that to speak to people on the other side. Richard, would you take a little moment here and explain how the right and the left side came about and how these are used? I think it would be very beneficial to our audience.
I will do that, Carolyn. But before I do, I'm drawn to mention that just a couple of hours ago, I had one of these sessions with a woman who was prompted by one of these radio shows, actually, to work with us on one of these sessions. And by the end of that session, she was calling forth her mother, who crossed over at some point, I'm not sure how long ago, and she had this beautiful exchange with her mother and felt this extraordinary love from her and opened up this dialogue. She was blown away by that experience. So it's there for all of us to be able to do this if we choose. It's just such a joy to help people open these doors for themselves, because we don't do it for you. You really do it for yourself. We just kind of provide some guidance to get you started. So the distinction between...
Before you go on, Richard, I don't mean to stop you. I
Yes,
really
you
want
do.
you I just want to comment to people that you are the one that do the right brain magic sessions with people, and just how talented you are, and you do such a magnificent job. I just want to mention that, because you deserve it.
Thank you, Carol. So, yeah, the distinction between the left and right side of the brains, I think, is something that most people understand to some degree. The left side of the brain is that side which is focused on the logical, the rational, the analytical, the judgmental, the planning, all these kind of things. And indeed, if you look at how we live life in many ways, the nature of our education system for the most part, the kind of work that most of us do, the kind of thumping loud music that a lot of young people these days listen to, even a few oldies these days, and also things like the violence that's in so many movies and television these days, and the fear that permeates the so-called news that gets pumped at us all day, every day. All of these things are encouraging us into the left brain. Anything that is generating fear or similar is encouraging us into the left brain. So it's little surprise that we've become so left brain dominated. And what's interesting is before the fall in Atlantis, these two hemispheres were much more closely connected. And so, and indeed in that time, the left brain was much more the servant than it is today. And these two hemispheres are coming back together as we move through the process of preparation for ascension and beyond. And the right brain is focused on such things as our intuitive skills, our psychic abilities, our creativity. It's where wisdom comes forth, and it's our spiritual side, and it's indeed where we hear messages from other forms of consciousness. And I say that because it's not limited to beings on the other side of the veil. It includes everything in this space, including the consciousness of our physical bodies, or indeed aspects of our physical bodies, crystals, trees, animals, plants, you name it. All these things have consciousness that we can communicate with. It's just that we've forgotten, and it seems a bit strange and weird these days, but it's all there for us if we choose.
That reminds me of some of the work. You know, Richard and I experimented a lot with this before we started talking to other people around it, the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain. And I can remember being curious about an orange. And I used the right side of the brain to converse with the consciousness of the orange. And the orange explained to me how it grew on the tree and how it was communicated by the tree that it would go out and go to other people and actually nourish them. And I just thought that was so fascinating. The kind of dialogues that you can have, like you said, with crystals and stones and trees, it's just amazing what you can learn. It's a real fun process. And, yes.
And really, we're not crazy. Really, we're not.
Well, the people that you instruct to do it, I guess there's a lot of crazies out there besides us.
A growing number, I think, actually. If you can't see them, join them. What can I say?
So I sounded like a crazy when I was talking about communicating with the consciousness of an orange.
No.
Oh, my dear. Okay, we're going to do a little bit experiment since I'm one of the crazies and perhaps you are too. Richard's going to connect with St. Helena. And understanding that this is an energy exchange between the two of us and St. Helena, you in the audience, if you work on a few things, you may and actually should be able to pick up her energies also. Believe that you can do it, and it'll be amazing what you come up with. So you may or may not have a picture of what St. Helena might look like or what history teaches us or shows us what she might look like, but just think of St. Helena as being the one who founded the true cross, and whatever picture comes to mind, put it in your third eye and just quietly call her name, St. Helena. And there is an energetic link that will be set up between you and her. And as Richard explains what her energy feels like, you might be able to connect with it and feel this also. So intend that you will be part of this. You just might be surprised what you come up with. So, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to call in St. Helena and explain to our audience what her energy feels like.
She has this beautiful, regal energy, very loving, very powerful, very regal energy. She was a woman of great power and great majesty is what I would, the words I would use based on this energy that I experienced from her. It's just beautifully clean and clear, and as I say, the words regal and majestic come to mind as I experience her energy. I've not connected with her before in this way. It's just beautiful, just magnificent energy, very heart-centered, as I say, and very clearly very feminine energy. Just a wonderful experience.
Thank you for that, Richard. I had been communicating with St. Helena for some time, and I attribute an event where she had protected me. I was in my car, and the brake in my car had caught fire, and it was the brake that was right underneath of the gas tank. And I attribute her watching over me and helping me. Now, a lot of events circled this event. A lot of things happened, and don't really want to get into that. But what I do want to say is when you make these connections with people on the other side, they do throw a protective circle around you. And so it can become very, very valuable. Now, with that connection that you have, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to take our message. I'm kind of chuckling here because I know she has a message prepared for our audience. If you'd be kind enough to bring it forth, I would appreciate it.
Let's see what she has to say. My dear friends, it is an honor to connect with you in this manner across what seems like, you might say, eons of time, and yet in ways it is no time from several perspectives. Firstly, it seems like a long time ago in your terms when I was present upon your planet, and yet in the scheme of things it was such a short time ago, and from my perspective, there is no distinction between that time and this time because, as you perhaps understand, I now dwell in what you call the now, where past, present, and future are all one. And so it is as if I am living that time now as I speak to you. And it is a great honor to be able to come forth in this way and to share perhaps some insights with you about my time, my life upon the planet, so that you understand the mission that I carried and what I undertook on many levels, some of which has been somewhat understood by your historical records and some of which your historical records have no record of whatsoever. And so let me begin by telling you of my birth origins. There are several places that it has been said I came from, but I indeed came from Britain. I was born in Britain. Some of the stories say that I was a lowly employee, but indeed I came from royal bloodlines. I will say to you that the royal bloodlines of that time were very different from what is considered royalty in your time, where the forces of the dark have very much overtaken what you consider royalty in your time. And so it was a very different matter, and I do not wish to delve deeply into that subject at this moment. But I will say that I was born, indeed I chose to be born, into a regal family because I understood that my mission was to assist in the establishment as best as I was able, the establishment of links to the work of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene as it was undertaken some 300 or so years before my time, and to ensure that there were threads of some sort coming forth into your time. And so I grew up as what you might term a Celtic Christian. Some of you understand that the early Christian church was taken to Britain by Joseph of Arimathea, who was Yeshua's uncle and Mary Magdalene's father. And so he established what became known as Celtic Christianity in Britain, very much in the time of the work that was undertaken by Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And it's important that you understand that Joseph had great connections to Britain, not only because he owned tin mines in Cornwall prior to the crucifixion, but also he was an archduke of the Druidic traditions. And so when one speaks of Celtic Christianity, it was a marriage of the great knowledge that he carried as a Druid, intermingled with the true teachings of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And so you might describe the Celtic Christians as being Gnostics, Gnostic Christians as you would understand that, teaching people in terms of how to go within. And so he was carrying the message of Yeshua and what was being taught, the skills, the understanding, the knowledge, the wisdom, and the truth of that great soul, that great being that came forth in that time to sow some key messages and undertake some key work in preparation for the time in which you now find yourselves. And so you might describe Celtic Christianity as having been truly a great mystical tradition, which was very deeply connected to the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding of the Druids. And so I was born into those traditions, and it gave me a great base of understanding of who and what Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were in a true sense, and gave me that grounding to then take forth, to then become the mother of Constantine the First, who your history books record as being what you might consider the creator of the Christian Church as you know it, the establishment of what became the Roman Catholic Church through that work done at the Council of Nicaea. And your history books record that Constantine was not in truth a Christian, but indeed studied the traditions of Mithraism, which was the primary, what you might consider, religion at the time. And I would say that Constantine was a pragmatist from the point of view of his display of religious interest. Above all, his role was as an emperor of Rome. And so he was focused on what was necessary to be seen to be doing in order to strengthen the the empire, you might say. However, from a very young age, he was schooled in the mystical traditions that I had grown up in, the metaphysical. And indeed, he and I worked very closely over many years undertaking important spiritual work. We understood that we were aspects of great souls that had worked together over many, many lifetimes upon Earth. And so once that understanding came into place, we used that knowledge and understanding to undertake important energetic work together. And it is why, to an extent, your records show that he and I were very close, because indeed that was so. And there are many that have been critical of the fashioning, you might say, of the Christian traditions as they came forth in that Council of Nicaea. And this is because, to a great degree, in a public sense, the Gnostics, the mystical traditions of Christianity, were forced underground through what came forth at the Council of Nicaea. And this might seem incongruous in a sense, given what I have just described to you about Constantine's understanding. But you see, you need to understand the connection that I made earlier when I said that I understood my mission was to ensure that there was some understanding of the work of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene that came forth into your time. And so this was a key driver in Constantine establishing Christianity as the preferred religion within Rome, so that it could flow down into your time. And he understood that much of the teachings were going to be distorted. But he saw the necessity of compromise, of pragmatism, given the powers of those that he was working with, so he could build something that would carry some key threads through to your time. And indeed, that has happened. Yes, the Catholic Church distorted the truth of who and what Yeshua was, and has at one point sought to represent Mary Magdalene as being a prostitute. But you see, those distortions really have not destroyed the message that has come down, in a sense. The connection flowed down through that religion, even with all of the distortion that was undertaken over hundreds and hundreds of years. And so I wanted to initially give you this rather different perspective on how these events unfolded, who I was, who Constantine was in that regard, and the role that we were performing in a sense of finding a way to ensure that the name of Yeshua flowed down into your time and those threads could flow through. So you might say we formalized between us, in a sense, the existence of the Christian Church in a form that would come down and be expressed in your time, despite the distortions it has suffered along the way. And it is in this context that you can then begin to understand why, once that piece of the puzzle was put in place, that is the work at the Council of Nicaea, that I then travelled to what you call the Holy Land to seek to establish as best as I could the threads of what was achieved by Yeshua and his mission along with Mary Magdalene in that time. And that's why I went searching for relics and oversaw the building of key churches in the Holy Land so that these connections could be put in place and allow the understanding of who and what Yeshua was to some extent to flow down into your time. And so this, above all else, was the key aspect of my mission and, to an extent, the mission of my son, Constantine. And so it is.
That's a beautiful message, and I appreciate you coming forth and bringing that to us. And it did answer some questions that I had had. And, of course, one of them was the Gnostics, the understanding of the Gnostics being, you might say, hidden from the truths of the Catholic Church. And I thank you for telling me that. And also, I want to know a little bit about your journey, because it was quite a journey for you to go to the Middle East and spend this time looking for these places that Yeshua frequented and that pertained to him. Can you give us a little bit more information about that journey that you did?
I was blessed to have a strong body and lived to what was quite an old age in those times. And my body was strong enough so that I could make that journey in what was my 70s. And as you understand, most people did not live to such an age at that time. And because Constantine understood the importance of what we were doing from the point of view of establishing that message to flow down to this time, he ensured that I had all of the resources and all of the financial support and all of the staffing, you might say, and the protection to undertake that journey in relative comfort. I say relative because in those days, making such a journey at that age was a challenge under any circumstances. But it was made as comfortable as possible, and we both understood the importance of this. And whilst I am credited with building those churches, in truth, it was really Constantine's resources that had those churches be built. And yes, I chose the sites and the reasons why they were built, but essentially they were built under the guidance and direction of Constantine, because, as you understand, he was the emperor. And so even though I was his mother and held in high regard, I did not have the authority to command or demand that this work be undertaken. And so in truth, these really should be credited to Constantine, albeit under my guidance. And so it was a tortuous journey that I undertook, and as I said, it was really to ensure that those connections were in place back to that mission that Yeshua and Mary Magdalene undertook, to ensure that the connections for the Christian church in whatever form it came forth were grounded back into what unfolded in that time.
That's beautiful. Thank you. It is credited to your discovery, you might say, that you found the true cross, the one that Yeshua was crucified upon. Can you give us some insight into that?
This is widely believed to be so, and indeed, I spent some time searching out that relic, and it is true that, to the best of my ability and understanding, I did actually locate the cross upon which Yeshua was crucified. It was difficult to be certain in that time. However, I believe you understand that I was able to channel and connect with my higher aspects and my guidance, and indeed other beings. And so this information was key in my searching this out. And so I was satisfied at the time that I did indeed find what is known as the true cross, the cross upon which Yeshua was crucified. And so from the perspective of where I view it here and now, you might say, I indeed know that I actually did find that cross and that it was returned with me back to Europe.
Well, you can't hear it, but I'm sitting here chuckling. It didn't occur to me that you would be channeling your higher self to find this. And I guess there's nothing new under the sun, is it?
This dear one is much older than you and I.
Well, you made my night. I love it. The crown of thorns, was that something that you had discovered also?
It was not something that I found. There are many stories about this, and it was not something I was either looking for or found.
Yeah, I asked that question because there are a lot of stories about that, and I thought maybe you had some knowledge that could clarify this. Now, the tomb, after the crucifixion, the tomb in which Yeshua was taken to, do you have any information that you can give us about that? Because there are several locations in the Holy Land where it is said that this place is found.
As you understand, the tomb was relatively close to Jerusalem and relatively close to where Yeshua was crucified. And so I was satisfied that I indeed found the location of the tomb. I am not clear beyond that what your question is asking me.
Well, today there is a place called the Garden, and I was there, and I sort of felt that that was the place where Joseph of Arimathea had his grave and that they had used, and you might not be familiar with that place now. Are you aware of what I speak of?
I am aware of what you speak, and indeed what you felt was that tomb is indeed that tomb.
Thank you so much for confirming that for me. And it's not a place, for our listeners, it is not a place generally where the Catholic Church states that Yeshua was buried. There is in the Holy Land another tomb that they claim was the place. But the Garden is a lovely area, and if you go to Jerusalem, it would be wonderful if you would seek that out, because I certainly felt that that place was where his tomb was. So I would like to bring that forth, because it's not something that is well known, but certainly Christians who are interested in this would want to know about it. So, you, as I look at history, there is a church in Rome that is dedicated to you, and you had some of your personal items there. Are you familiar with what I'm speaking of?
I am familiar with the church of which you speak.
Is there items of your personal, what you personally held during that lifetime, are they located there, and are they the true ones?
They are indeed items that I held in that lifetime. And indeed, I had influence, you might say, on the specification of that building?
The area where that is located, is there a vortex there, something special in the land that you worked with the energy?
There is a vortex in that location, and indeed it is a vortex that Constantine and I worked with in that time.
Now, is there something in that vortex that the individuals of my generation are able to tap into and use for spiritual purposes?
Those who visit that church, if they are aware of the presence of the vortex, can connect with that vortex, and it will assist them in connecting energetically with higher dimensions, and it will also help them in clearing their emotional bodies of past life energies. And above all, I would say that it gives that church a, you might say, very spiritual feel. And so my suggestion is that those of you who visit that location simply be aware of the vortex and allow it to connect with you and you to connect with it, and just enjoy the energies that are present in that location and allow it to remind you of the history of that particular place.
I thank you for that. And I have another question about that vortex. For those individuals who are not able to travel to that church, can they energetically connect with that vortex wherever they're living?
The energies on the planet have changed in recent years. And so there is that opportunity to connect with any location on the planet as if you were there. Simply go into meditation and intend to be connected to that church or to the energies that are present at some of the Gothic cathedrals such as Chartres or the others, or indeed the energies of the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid. You can choose as an individual to connect with these energies in the security of your own home. This was not possible in olden times, but it is now possible to do this. I'm not saying that the experience is entirely the same, because those sites carry very complex energies, and the experience of the buildings and so on themselves adds to the overall experience. And if you have the opportunity to visit these places, I encourage you to take that opportunity. However, in terms of connecting with the energies of that vortex, then indeed you can do it quietly within your own personal meditation space.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And for if an individual has gone to some of these sacred places, it is a magnificent opportunity. And thank you for telling me that. Now, you really have sparked my curiosity when you started to discuss, well, not really discuss, but just mention the energy of the King's Chamber in the pyramid. Is there something that additional that you could tell me and our audience about the energies and the purpose of the King's Chamber?
Some of you understand that there was a, what you might consider a preparation path, a path of preparation traveling through the various temples along the Nile, and the peak of that path was the Great Pyramid. The stories in your time from the Egyptologists that these pyramids were Pharaoh's tombs is complete nonsense. And indeed, there is no evidence to support such a notion. This chamber was a very carefully constructed chamber to, you might say, heighten energies, to, in a sense, act as an ascension location for those who had undertaken the preparation through that very tortuous path as it existed in that time, a very challenging and difficult initiation path. And so it was used as the final initiation step, but indeed could be used for an individual who was walking the path of undertaking a personal ascension. And indeed, quite a number did undertake that through that location. Today, the power of that chamber and indeed that pyramid is greatly lessened for a number of reasons. And in part, it was consciously undertaken because the dark had understood how to harness its power for their own purposes and to help to enslave humanity through it. And so it was one of the reasons that much of the power was withdrawn from it, to lessen their ability to use it in that manner. But the extraordinary building that that was, in a sense, is still visible. Some have examined the shape and the orientation of that pyramid and the extraordinary precision of its overall construction, but also the very precise dimensions of the king's chamber and indeed of the sarcophagus in which you might lie. These are very finely tuned spaces to support that work. And indeed, when it was at its height, there would be many other individuals spaced in key places within the pyramid and indeed underneath it to support the work undertaken for a key individual in that sarcophagus. So there is a great deal of power and understanding related to that pyramid which has long been lost. But of course, all of this will be recovered as events unfold.
Thank you so much for that information. And we want to bring in our listeners, dear one, who have questions. And Kat is on line one. Kat?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I was wondering, she mentioned that she found the true cross. Is there any shards of it still left on this planet?
You're asking if the true cross is still on this planet? Is that the question?
Yes, any pieces.
Yes, I will ask her. Richard, did you hear that question? Kat wants to know if there's any pieces of the true cross left on this planet.
There are still pieces of the true cross left upon the planet. However, it is important not to overly focus on those relics. They served their purpose in the sense, as I said, that the key objective was to have some form of memory, you might say, of who and what Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were, flow down to your time. And so the relics served a purpose in that regard. But the real thing to understand about the cross shape is its power as a tool for energetic work, and this understanding will come forth for all of humanity as events unfold.
Thank you so much. Kat, thank you for asking the question.
Thank you. Goodbye.
You're welcome. And Helen is on line three. Welcome, Helen.
Thank you, Carolyn and Richard. A great show and great guests. And greetings to Mother Saint Helena. I have one personal question, and I want to know, was I ever related to her in any way or not? If not, set me the record straight.
Okay, we'll ask her. So, Richard, ask our dear beloved Saint Helena if Helen was related to her during that lifetime.
You, my dear one, were present on the planet at that time. However, we were not related in any sense. There were many of what you know of as the cherubim present on the planet at that time, because it was important that a group be present and undertaking key energetic work to support what was truly an important formative moment to ensure that that story, as I say, came down to your time. And so you were one of those cherubim who incarnated at that time to undertake that important energetic work.
Thank you. Well, dear Wonderful. Cherubim, you were busy.
Yes,
thank you for your question. Yes,
Helen,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now, Douglas is online too. Welcome, Douglas.
Richard, hey, when you asked us to tune into her energy at the beginning of the show, I was very aware of the power of the divine feminine that she is connected to and brought with her. And I wanted to ask her if she could speak about the role of the divine feminine in our preparation and unfoldment of the ascension here.
What a beautiful question, Douglas. Thank you. Richard, did you hear that question?
I did.
Thank you.
It is important to understand that a key aspect of the agenda of the dark was to not only discredit, but indeed to attempt to destroy the divine feminine. Of course, it is not possible to do so, but that has been an objective that they have had. And it is one of the reasons why you have seen such a suppression of the feminine on your planet, the abuse of the feminine in so many ways, on so many levels, in so many cultures. There has been this suppression of the feminine, the devaluing of the feminine. And this, as you understand, Douglas, has been to the detriment of all. And so part of the process that is unfolding on your planet, and indeed across the cosmos as events unfold, is the reestablishment of the power and the role and the position of the divine feminine in all creation. Its place alongside the divine masculine, which in its own way has been just as lost and destroyed as this negative, aggressive male aspect has become dominant. And so this time, this ascension process, is perhaps above all else embodying the reinstatement of the divine feminine. And so it is that it is coming forth in your time through the work that you are connected with. And so it is.
Thank you, dear one. Well, Douglas.
Oh, that was beautiful.
I'm so glad that we could bring it to you. Thank you for the question, Douglas. And now we're going to go to Louis on line one. We don't have much time. Welcome, Louis.
Thank you, Carolyn. Hello, Richard. I do have a question for St. Helena. I would like to know if, for her preparation for her work, either in that life or perhaps even in a previous life, she was connected to the Avalon and the energy of that place.
What a lovely question. Thank you. Richard, did you hear that, the energy of the Avalon?
I did. As you understand, the energies of Avalon have been very important from a mystical perspective, not only from the perspective of those in that area, but indeed for the planet as a whole, because it is a very important energetic location. And your question is an interesting one, because whilst I was aware of its presence in my time, it was not something that I was overly focused on or connected with. However, I will say that there have been other aspects of my monad that have come forth and been very actively connected to Avalon and all that it represents. Queen Guinevere is an example of this.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you, St. Helena and Louis. That was a very interesting question, and I thank you for bringing it forth.
Thank you to all of you.
You're welcome. And we are up to the end. We only have a couple minutes before this show is over. Rick is on line three, and I don't know that we really have time for an answer. Rick, can you real quickly give us your question? We only have a couple minutes.
Certainly, Carolyn. Could you explain the significance of the Cairo symbol?
Gee, I love that question, and it's very important. I don't know if she has time to give an explanation, because we only have 3 minutes. So, Richard, what can she say quickly about the Cairo symbol?
The Cairo symbol is, above all, a symbol connected to Yeshua. And there are many stories about how that came forth for Constantine. And indeed, he did experience it in a vision, because, as I have explained to you, he was able to connect to the other realms. And so he experienced that vision of that Cairo symbol, which, if you look historically, had an association with Yeshua. And so, in a sense, it was connected, though not well understood in your time. It was connected to the mission that we both had of carrying forth the story of Yeshua down into your time. And so that, you might say, he was fighting that battle under the guidance and support and in the name of Yeshua. And so that is why that symbol came forth then. And you may have recognized that the symbol that these two use today carries that Cairo symbol and carries a very similar message to the one that Constantine used in this sign, conquer. You may notice they use in this sign lead, because indeed there is a great connection between the work that Constantine was doing, you might say, in that time along with me, and what these two are doing in this time. There is a great connection between these two.
Rick, thank you for your question. We have to go now. We're right at the end of the time. And I would like to thank you, Richard, for bringing St. Helena forth. You did a gorgeous job, as usual. And I would like to thank St. Helena for all of her beautiful information that we are so happy to hear. And I thank you both. We
thank
have
you,
1 minute. Yeah, we've got 1 minute. Those hours go by quickly, don't they?
Well, I just want to thank you, Carolyn, for the beautiful job that you do in setting up the context for these sessions. And I know you are particularly keen to hear from St. Helena because of the very close connection you've had with her and her work over such a long time. And, Helena, thank you for coming forth in this way. It's been beautiful to work with her, and that energy has stayed with me very strongly throughout this entire hour. It's been magnificent.
Thank you both from the bottom of my heart. And it is time to go, everyone, until next week. Oh, real quick, Richard, who are we going to have on the show next week?
Oh, I think we're going to have Anna, Yeshua's grandmother. Is that right? Is that what we're doing next week?
That's
I think
what
yeah,
we're
Anna's
doing.
Next going to be next week.
Yeah.
Oh, really fun.
Yeah, indeed it will. So, good night to you, Richard, and everyone out there, and my blessings to all of you.
Good night, Carolyn. Good night, everyone.